This is the best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network, brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting Adam to 21000.
All right, let's talk.
Enjoy the best of today's show. Here's Adam Gold.
Tim always has a lot to say. Tim and I got into it a little bit on Twitter yesterday. I'm not necessarily feeling the love for Greg Sankey as he is, but we'll talk about that with Tim Brando in just a little bit. Welcome to stave season, Phoenix. This is it. This is your first day of stave season. Probably be the only day of stave season because it is game six. And once we get to game seven, it's for all the marbles, or as Brent Musburger once said, all the Tostitos. I don't know if you remember that Fiesta Bowl, but it was for all the Tostitos. Beautiful. Anyway, Suns looked like world beaters after games one and two. They have no answer for Giannis right now. None. When the Bucks have Middleton and Holiday going offensively, I think the Suns are at their mercy. You just basically hope that they miss. That has not happened the last few games. I said this yesterday. We were talking with our friend Kanata Edwards, Locked On Hornets podcast, and I have thoughts from all three of them that we're going to, all three of our regular NBA dudes, Kanata, Brendan Whitted, and Brian Geisinger. I've sought out thoughts from each of them about tonight, and we'll bring you those in a minute. But when we talked about it yesterday, I think that the beginning of this turnaround really started when Giannis, in the second half of Game 2, just went bonkers. He scored 40-some-odd points, 42 points, I think, in Game 2 in a losing effort. But you could tell at that point that Giannis is like, you know what? I'm going to drag you people back into this series. They didn't win game two, but I thought it got Giannis going and it gave the team a little bit of a cushion. And now that Middleton and Holiday have been dynamite, Pat Connaughton has been very good. They're getting enough out of the other players. Bobby Portis has given them energy and some big play off the bench as well. To me, that has been the difference. However, this is not about that for a lot of people. This is about Chris Paul, and I'm not really sure why it's about Chris Paul other than one of the greatest players we've ever seen who has yet to win a title, because I don't think Chris Paul has been bad. But this is Kendrick Perkins from ESPN who is taking an opportunity to take his own shot.
I'm going to throw a shot at their leader, okay? CP3 needs CPR. He has to wake the hell up. And I'm not talking about from a number standpoint, right? I'm talking about him as being a leader, bringing that tenacity. We already know in his sleep he could get you 20 and 10. We get that. But I haven't seen the same sense of urgency, L. And when you look at CP3, you talk about these young Phoenix Suns and their core of this group. They follow CP3. We heard DeAndre Ayton in the interview throughout these playoffs say the best thing happened for his career was CP3 coming to Phoenix, because he put that dog into him. He installed that killer mentality. And right now, CP3 is not showing us that he's a killer.
All right, there is a lot of truth, by the way, to what Kendrick Perkins had to say. That was not so much because Paul's play, if you look at his play, he's been fine, all right? But ESPN put up a gross, just totally misleading stat earlier this morning, saying that Chris Paul turned it over 15 times in the last three games, which, by the way, is not true. The number is 10. 10 turnovers the last three games. His statistics, essentially, are the same over the last three games as they were in the first two, when the Phoenix Suns were up 2-0, and now they're down 3-2. But there is a big difference. And the difference is that Chris Paul has shot the ball less. And maybe that's what Perkins is talking about. in that Chris Paul has to get back to being more aggressive for his own shot. It can't just be the Devin Booker show. Because Devin Booker, while, I mean, potentially down the road legendary, has shown to be not great at times. He was not good in Game 3. He was amazing in Game 4. But it didn't work out. They lost the game. And he was great until late in Game 5. Here's Chris Paul on what he's going to tell his team or what has told his team after the loss in Game 5.
I think I sent a message to the guys after Game 5 and was like, we got to go win Game 6. That's all that matters. You know, anybody that's been in a series, you got to have a short memory. Got to have a short memory. And this is something that our team hasn't done together yet. It's our first elimination game. Ain't no advice for it. You just go do it.
Yeah, you do. You just go do it. By the way,
it's a good message. Win Game 6.
Win Game 6. That is sound advice.
If you don't do that, you're done.
Last time the Bucks won a title, 50 years ago. Did you know that, Alec? It's been 50 years.
I hadn't heard.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Bobby Dandridge, Oscar Robertson. Those were the big three back then. 50 years ago, Giannis, well aware of the history.
You mean a lot to us too, you know, the players and the coach staff and everybody that, you know, worked for it. And obviously it mean a lot to the city that supported us since day one. But even now that just being in the finals, it means a lot to the city. You know, last time we were in the finals was 1974, but winning it, that'd be amazing.
Yeah, it would be amazing. The city of Milwaukee has not done a lot of winning. I don't know if you count the Green Bay Packers, who used to play two or so games a year in Milwaukee in the regular season, but no playoff games. So I don't know if you count the Green Bay Packers in the city of Milwaukee's winning heritage. That would certainly up the total. But other than the Bucks in 1971, the only other championship Milwaukee has won was 1957 World Series, the Milwaukee Braves beat the New York Yankees in seven games. They won Game 7 at Yankee Stadium. Lou Burdett pitched a shutout, one of his three complete game victories in that series. Henry Aaron had three home runs and seven runs batted in the series. He hit .393. Aaron was good, just in case you're unaware. All right, let's move on to another topic. ACC Media Days start tomorrow. So we get to hear all about the academic All-Americans, six Davey O'Brien watch list quarterbacks. That'll be fun. The Maxwell Award, all sorts of stuff like that. But we will also hear, I'm guessing, things like what Greg Sankey was laying down in Hoover, Alabama yesterday. The commissioner of the SEC laid waste to the current structure of the NCAA. I'm going to give that a polite golf clap because where the hell you been? I mean, nothing has changed at the NCAA other than everybody's so much more aware. And, oh, by the way, you took the ultimate 9-0-L in the Supreme Court. But nothing has changed over the last five, really more than that, years. So, polite golf clap to you, Greg Sankey. But in terms of true leadership, real life stuff, overcoming the biggest obstacle college football has in front of it, Sankey went hard at the issue at hand.
Let me be clear to our fans, to our coaches, to our staff members, and to our student athletes. COVID-19 vaccines are widely available. They've proven to be highly effective. And when people are fully vaccinated, we all have the ability to avoid serious health risks, reduce the virus's spread, and maximize our chances of returning to a normal college football experience and to normal life. With 6 weeks to go before kickoff, now is the time to seek that full vaccination.
Yeah. Again, let's think about it as in a competitive standpoint. Unvaccinated players stand in the way of you playing. Now, as I tweeted this out yesterday, and man, you knew it was coming. It's a tough sell in SEC territory because just using the state of Alabama as a guide, they are roughly one-third of the population of Alabama is fully vaccinated. Roughly one-third. The numbers are similar in Mississippi and in Arkansas and, heck, even in places in Missouri. Texas and Florida right now lead the nation in new viruses. By the way, the virus daily infection rate tripled in the last month. So we're over 34,000 day on average. Last 6 days, 34,000 a day. It's all about Delta variant, which more contagious, not more dangerous than the original. So it's not new and improved. It's just more contagious. So remember I said this was about shots? Greg Sankey wants today and this whole week to be about shots. Our friend Tim Brando is joining us here. Fox Sports play-by-play ace. Here's what I want to do first. I want to get to Greg Sankey and what he had to say yesterday at SEC Media Day. Not so much the specific quotes as much as the tone. He was hypercritical of the NCAA. That's great. I understand. To me, I just need to... I don't know if it's unfair or not, but I'm giving him a polite golf clap because all of the things he said about the NCAA, I mean, he could have been saying this 5 years ago.
Well, I think we're none of them before were where they needed to be.
Yeah.
I totally agree with that. I mean, look, who's been pounding the pavement for, you know, college football playoff expansion? Who's been pounding the pavement about a czar for college football and unifying leadership? And my God, this time a year ago, they couldn't get one league to agree with another league on when to start.
Yeah.
You know, we found out that they were all operating as individual entities and not as one. This was after they had told us how cordial and collegial they had been in terms of sharing information during the pandemic. So, look, Adam, I get your point to a point. I guess sometimes in the world of Twitter, we read with those 144 characters or whatever they are now, what we read, and we surmise what we surmise, and we have to move forward. I just thought he sounded, and maybe this was more because of tone than it was of content, but I still thought the content was really, really good.
Sure.
In other words, hey, guys, if somebody needs to say this, and I'm not on the political side of any of this crap when it comes to vaccinations or not vaccinations, all right? I really don't care. If you deem yourself in a position where you don't need to have vaccinations, then fine. That's your individual choice, all right? It is. But when you're part of a team or when you're part of a corporation or you're part of a unit that is trying to achieve something, whether that's going out to call ball games, as I do for Fox, or going out to play ball games, as some players will be, even with their name, image, and likeness now being monetized, you have to adhere to some rules and regulations, okay? And if those rules and regulations are that you need to be healthy and you cannot be someone that's carrying a virus, then you better step in line or step out for good, one or the other. And I thought what he was saying was, look, this is your responsibility as players, your responsibility as teams and universities. And if you don't have your blank together, you're going to forfeit games. See ya.
Right. Know?
I loved that. Okay. It needed to be said. So there's really no political side to take. You either are healthy and you're operating a healthy ship that's capable of hosting football games, or you're not.
Tim Brando is with us. I just want to jump in here. I would say that of the five major commissioners, based on the fact that, you know, he and Bob Bowlsby, Big 12, I don't know how much of a needle mover that conference really is other than Oklahoma and Texas. But Bowlsby's been around a long time, so what he says, and he was very pro-vaccine when the Big 12 had their media day.
Right.
Greg Sankey is in a position now to assume the role of Jim Delaney. But what he said yesterday, and I don't have a problem with what he said, was that I hope he understands that his constituents in the SEC are among the unvaxxed. When they put SEC backs the vax poster up behind him, they're some of the lowest vaccinated states, including where they are in Hoover, Alabama. So I don't know, maybe he's got to do more to squeeze the state legislatures there.
Well, that I think that's the point for him, you know, in trying to drive this point home to the constituents within the league. But we're just dealing with football and college football and the situation with this season. He wanted to make absolutely certain, hey, you know, we're not going to bend over backwards here with the calendar. We did not build that in here, okay?
Yeah, they shouldn't either.
And they shouldn't. Yeah, you can't placate over and over and over again when it's all right there and we're ready to come out of this. And more than any other sport, that one last year did everything it could just to facilitate a season, period.
Yep.
So they're not going to go through those headaches this year. The responsibility should be with the universities and the players on the teams. Okay. So that's that. That's the first and foremost thing. Second thing that made me feel good, and one of the reasons why I was adamant in my return to sender, so to speak, on your golf clap, was that I honestly think that for the first time in a long, long while, not just Sankey, but all of these new commissioners, and I don't believe, with all due respect to Jim Delaney, who, you know, was clearly the most influential of his generation. And to Swath, who, you know, listen, I've been on the receiving end of some stern phone calls from John Swath. I have the utmost respect for John. But I'm not sure, Adam, without new leadership, that we would have gotten this college football expansion thing to where we did as quickly as we did. I'm really not. These young guns, which Sankey is a leader of, and Greg was the one that, at least from a public posture, did a 180. Okay, he had been saying, "Well, you know, we've been very satisfied with four,
sure,
and we still believe that four actually works." You know, he was the one that was really blazing the trail for, you know, trumpeting that for quite some time. All the while, they had a 2-year effort to try to figure this thing out. Well, you know, good for him. That was surprising to me. I mean, it really was. And I talk to these guys and to athletic directors on my own all the time. These guys are friends of mine. I've known them since they were – I knew Greg Sankey when he was working at Northwestern State just down the road and was the Southland Conference commissioner years ago. And, you know, he does have a background with the NCAA, as you well know. And I think that he understands probably more than any other commissioner out there what they don't have to do their jobs. And he was pretty specific about what their issues were. And for college athletics, particularly moving into the NIL era that we're about to move into, if they want to regulate what's transpiring with NIL in any way, shape, fashion, or form, this is the guy, okay? This is the guy that the other commissioners should really look to, because his understanding of the inner workings of governance for the totality of intercollegiate athletics is really pretty strong, given his resume.
I have to get one more question in before I let you go, Tim Brando, voice of Fox Sports, football and basketball. And I'm just going to go kind of future here, because something that Mark Emmert said the other day about we can't all operate the same, and Greg Sankey talked about a school in the Northeast, you know, small school in the Northeast shouldn't have, you know, essentially influence sway over the bigger schools. And I understand all of that. So I've been saying this for a long time. Are we headed for a separation within Division I? I'm not talking about FBS and FCS. I am talking about Power Five conferences, maybe, you know, schools from the American and the Sun Belt just going off and doing their own thing.
not now, but in the foreseeable future, meaning a decade. All right, here's the issue, Adam. Let's be clear. And this is what makes Mark Emmert's comments so so filled with pablum. And,
yeah, it's he's empty. He's an empty suit.
He knows. He's got that office in Indianapolis is there for one reason: the men's NCAA basketball championship. Were it not for the men's NCAA basketball championship tournament, there would be no reason for the NCAA's existence at this stage. Okay. They are a bad policing agency, mm-hmm. As has been documented. Yahoo does a better job of investigating than the NCAA does. Okay.
Yeah.
They are really good at sanctioning bowl games that people don't care about. All right. That's what they do. They sanction bowl games. You know, Jimmy Kimmel wants a bowl. You got it.
Yeah.
Okay, great. So that's what they do. That's it. All right. They are able to monetize the schools with hefty paychecks from the NCAA basketball tournament. And that thing is in existence until 2032. Okay. So just mark your calendar. After 2032, could we see a split up? Yes, because no longer would those schools, because they're all greedy. Okay. The one thing all institutions of higher learning have in common, okay, no matter how large or small the size of the athletic department is, they're all greedy. They all want their money. And the men's NCAA basketball tournament is funding 80% of the non-revenue producing, I think it's maybe even more than that. It could be 92%. I think it's 92% of the non-revenue producing championships. Well, they don't want to have to suddenly start paying for anything. So they're going to keep that intact for as long as the basketball tournament is there. Now, as it relates to the group of five schools, now, especially with 12 teams, okay, if you're Coastal Carolina, you are just, my God, you're looking at what's transpired, and you're saying, hey, man, we just got our 15 minutes of fame last year. Now, if we put together a game with BYU and we're undefeated afterwards, hell, we might get in this thing with 12 teams. So we could have, you know, we've invested a lot of money into this thing, and we could actually see some big time results. So you're the group of five, you're not a power five crap, is going to go by the boards. Give Mike Oresko and the American Conference a lot of credit. He pounded P6.
Yeah.
He got a better TV deal as a result, and with the help of UCF and Cincinnati and Memphis, and now with from the Sun Belt a year ago, with teams like Louisiana Lafayette and certainly Coastal Carolina, these teams have now said, you know, what about us? And they've got a legit cause. So I think we're going to see less conversation about the haves and have-nots because of expansion. When that happens, which I believe will be in 23, not 25, the big deal there will be getting the Rose Bowl on board.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the big hump that they've got to take care of, is getting the Rose Bowl on board. And I think that they'll be able to do that. But no, I don't see a split off until we get basketball taken care of. And that's still another, you know, 9-10 years down the road.
Tim Brando, you are the best. I appreciate your time, sir. Enjoy the rest of your summer. We will see you in the fall at a college location near you.
All right, pal.
Chip Patterson is here. Normally we do this on Wednesday, but Chip is not coming to Charlotte tomorrow, which makes me sad. So I decided to make me happy today. And Chip is talking with us. Real Chip, you should have interest in this. The CBS Sports Classic, this is a college basketball thing. North Carolina will play UCLA when North Carolina sent out their non-conference basketball schedule last week. It said we don't know where the game's going to be played, basically. It said TBD. It will be played in Las Vegas at T-Mobile Arena. T-Mobile Arena gets a lot of good good events. Duke's playing a game out there. I think they're playing Gonzaga out there, aren't they?
Well, weren't we having the conversation that if the Pac-12 were to expand, UNLV would be a very interesting target, just because Las Vegas was not allowed to participate in the college sports scene for a long time. Yes. You couldn't host events. You couldn't host championships. And as those attitudes towards the city and the sports gambling and the gambling culture itself continue to turn, it's kind of the hot new spot. I mean, the Knights, obviously, the Raiders moving. If the Pac-12 wanted to expand, I would think that UNLV would be on that list just to be able to have more. I mean, they already host Pac-12 championships in T-Mobile Arena, but just to continue to engage with that community.
There's no question about it. I mean, I've said this before. I'll just use bowl games as an example. I mean, if you're going to have a bowl game, it should be in a destination city. You know, there are destination cities depending on what you're interested in. I mean, like, you can make, to an extent, Denver's a destination city. It's a place that I have gone on vacation because there's so much to do, not just in Denver, but in the surrounding area. So, I mean, Las Vegas is a destination city. So, yes, football is okay, but who cares? You're still adding a major media center and a thriving, growing city. So, yeah, that would be a great idea. You and I did not talk about that, but we can next time. So here's the list of Davey O'Brien Award watch list players. Davey O'Brien, quarterback, top quarterback in the country. ACC has 6 players on this list, which is apparently the most in the country, but I'm not keeping track. Malik Cunningham, Phil Jurkovec from Boston College, interesting. Mackenzie Milton of Florida State, Derek King of Miami, Sam Howell of UNC, and DJ Uiagalelei from Clemson. What are the obvious surprises for you?
No Devin Leary. That Cunningham was on the list after a year where he was a little bit inconsistent. Phil Jurkovec is good. He's a very good quarterback.
I mispronounced his name.
And Boston College's hopes. I mean, like, Zay Flowers is one of the best wide receivers in the ACC. Mm-hmm. I'd put him right up there with Jakari Robertson from Wake Forest. And Zay Flowers needs someone to throw him the ball if he's going to be able to go out and get as many yards as he did a year ago.
Right.
So, like, Phil Jurkovec is an important. He's a very good player. He's important. I think that Louisville can be good without Cunningham being excellent. That's how I would compare those two that were surprised. I would put Devin Leary ahead of both of those if I was power ranking them. The big three is really fun for the dumbest, nerdy, like, media reasons, because you can only have one quarterback on your first team.
Right.
And normally, the quarterback of the first team, if they are in the mix for player of the year, is going to end up being player of the year.
Right.
But I don't necessarily think that the player of the year and the first team quarterback are going to be the same, and they could both be quarterbacks. Like, I was filling out my ACC awards ballot, and I was noticing, like, well, Brian Brazee, that's my vote for the preseason player of the year. But if I'm coming in trying to vote for a Clemson person, does that split votes with DJ Uiagalelei? Is DJU going to be first team quarterback while Sam Howell is the player of the year? Or will Sam Howell be the first team quarterback? I don't think the ACC in a long time has had 3 top tier quarterbacks that all are going to give us a season long, just sort of fun ACC barroom debate of who's the best quarterback in the league. Because Sam Howell, DJ Uiagalelei, and Derek King are like 3 of the 10 best quarterbacks in the country. They're all in the conference, and they're all going to physically be there. So I'm interested to see among the big three how they get sorted out on the preseason team.
This is sort of reminding me, and I can't even for the life of me come up with a third quarterback here, the Philip Rivers, Matt Schaub time, where Schaub was the player of the year, but like, we all were like, Philip Rivers is the best quarterback in the ACC. Look, I agree with you about Devin Leary, but isn't it as simple as Leary had injury issues last year, and he was.
Yes.
I think he was exceptionally.
The body
better.
Of work is limited,
right,
compared to those other two names, Jurkovec and Cunningham, without a doubt.
Yeah, so that's what it comes down to me. And I brought this up yesterday, and actually I may have even mentioned it earlier today. I do think it's interesting that you think that NC State is potentially the, you know, in the mix for the fourth best team after we get past Clemson and North Carolina and Miami, that NC State might be the next best team in the league. This is, I mean, I don't know what chance they've got to dethrone Clemson in the Atlantic, but this is one of those years where they might be really good.
Right. They could be a top 25 team. They've got all of the pieces to, you know, they've got all the pieces to do, get up in the top 25, lose, get kicked down to other receiving votes, get back into the top 25, lose, get kicked down to other receiving votes. But then at the end of the year, you look up and you're like, this 9-3 team, their only losses are to higher ranked, really good teams. That this was one of the 25 best teams in college football. I think they are undoubtedly one of the 40 best teams in college football. And, you know, you can have that 25-30 kind of argument. Like I was working on sort of power rating out the entire ACC, and it's just a glob. Now there's a big gap between those top three teams and the glob, but it is a take your pick in my eyes among your NC State, your Virginia Tech, your Pitt. I'm trying to think of if I've got anybody else up in that group right there, but that's where the conversation starts for me. And again, I told you I was filling out my awards ballot or predicted order of finish, NC State number two in the division. So I'm standing by the idea that among that pack, I give NC State the edge over Louisville. I give NC State the edge over Wake Forest, the edge over Boston College, all of these being neutral field observations, not necessarily my pick of what's going to happen when the teams play later on this fall, but neutral field power rating style observations. I give the Wolfpack the edge against everybody in the division except for Clemson. And when you stack them up side by side, I'm not as sold on Virginia Tech, and I think that Pitt needs to find an offensive line so Kenny Pickett isn't running for his life. Like, it just seems like a more complete team that Dave Doran's got here in Raleigh.
Yeah, I think you and I talked about this last week. If State's legitimately good, then they'll win all of those games, regardless of what those of where those games are, and regardless of the situations and how difficult the game is. If they're really good, those are the games that they will win, because the better team, not always, but in college football, more often than not, way more often than not, the better team manages to win the games. If you are really good and not just pretty good.
And not just have a bunch of really good players that are going to the NFL. There are NFL players starting for the Wolfpack on this roster. When you've got a handful of them, it's go time. That's what it means.
Final thing before we let Chip Patterson go. And I want to get to what Greg Sankey had to say yesterday. Not so much because I am milquetoast about his outward condemnation of the NCAA and the rule book and all of these things that it's now easy to be against after the Supreme Court lays waste to the collegiate model 9-0. It's very easy now to slam the NCAA, and I have no time for praising somebody who could have been saying this 5 years ago. But what do you make of basically threatening his constituents with vaccinations?
I mean, it's been set. He's the biggest voice in the room. And when Bob Bowlesby came out the gate last week and said, you know, we will not be having COVID-related postponements. And, you know, I was like, okay, now let's see if everybody else decides to take the same. Like, by the time Jim Phillips is speaking, and by the time Kevin Turner is speaking at the Big Ten, the line has already been drawn. Like, it's the standard has been set. And I think it's a preview of the future, because as the NCAA continues to be less and less of a factor to the point where we're not even going through the song and dance of looking to them for leadership, it's going to be these conference commissioners, and these conferences are going to be the ones that are setting the standards, because no one wants to actually set a standard that's going to apply across the entire Division I when it pertains to college football. So, you know, the Big 12's out here. Greg Sankey says this is what the SEC's doing. I anticipate that the Big 10 and the ACC and the Pac-12 will all follow suit, and it won't be the law across all of college football, but certainly among these power conferences, it will be the case that if you do not have the roster available to play, then it will be a no contest or a forfeit.
Greg Sankey said basically it's going to be a forfeit. It's a loss, and I'm on board with that. NC State baseball we have to learn from that. It taught us something, that it is part of the competitive framework, the competitive tapestry of sports, college sports these days, that is essentially a weapon. Be ready. Be able to play.
Do you think that Nick Saban got the tied the shots before the playoff? I don't not think it. I'm thinking back to like the very first people who I knew who got the vaccine, and I would consider them high priority, both in terms of either need or privilege or line of work.
Right.
And I imagine, knowing that you could jump in front of the line, I imagine there were 90 requests for time slots somewhere in Tuscaloosa or Birmingham.
The CVSs in Tuscaloosa were just jammed.
With 6'6", 330-pound future NFL lineman.
How did you get on the list? Well, when was it that Saban was resigned to being at home and conducting practice on Zoom? When was that?
I think it was early December, like late November, early December.
He probably wasn't vaccinated then, although maybe he was, and he just wasn't. Maybe he had a John Rahm situation where the 2-week window had not expired after the second dose. Who knows?
But I liked that, one of the pieces of Sankey's conversation said, "Hey guys, 6 weeks."
Yeah,
because that's one thing about trying to pump people up to go get the shot is like you need to have one, you need to have two, and then you need 2 weeks after before we can fully have this going. So the idea that he is choosing right now and that he's be very purposefully messaging this is being like, all right, listen, coaches, players, staff, here's the deal. You got to go now. It's not something where you're going to be able to the week before kickoff. Like just, you know what I'm going to do today? I'm going to buy my books and then I'm going to go be fully vaccinated, right? It takes some time.
It does take time. And my guess is that there are available appointments at CVS's and Walgreens and whatever other drugstore chains there are in SEC country. That's just the math tells us that there are available appointments. Chip Patterson, I miss you already tomorrow, but we'll talk next week.
Sounds good. Y'all be well.
You've been listening to the best of the Adam Gold Show podcast. Part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting ADAM to 21000. Don't forget, this podcast drops every weekday at 3 p.m. Or you can find it at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL Sports Fan app. Or you can subscribe for free at the iTunes and Google Play stores.